We're just looking at what we get out of the Old Testament. Not to us, but there's a lot of things in there for us. And, this is really going to take us forever. I've got to really try hard not to get into the details, because we were going to do Ruth today, kind of touch base on, finish up Judges, you know, and then just kind of talk about Ruth. And I must have read Ruth 5 or 6 times at least this last couple days. Just, it's really a good book. There's some marvelous stuff in the book of Ruth. So we'll save it for next week, because I was going back through Judges, and there's some things I just can't leave alone in Judges either. So apparently Sunday school is going to become Old Testament class for about 20 years at this rate. Although we're seeing some general things, and that's really all I want to do, because I want, you know, if we had one Bible for the community, it'd be different. I'd tell you every little thing I could tell you, but you read it, you get your stuff out of that thing. So I'll try not to be very specific on some of these things, but some generalities that I've seen go, as we even come to this point in our Old Testament, the numbers are huge. Have you noticed that? The numbers of people, the numbers of whatever they're talking about, everywhere from how many camels to how many people were killed or beheaded or whatever, they're just huge numbers. It's amazing. They utterly destroy. He says he utterly destroys. That really makes, remember the one where they have no breath? He makes sure they're dead. And it's women and children too. It's the men that are fighting, but the families go down too. And there's a lot of sermon in that thing. Whatever the guys do today can take down our families. It's the same application. And there's always war, but there always will be until the Lord comes back himself. It's all about conquering, losing, being captured. I mean, that was the manner of life for the Old Testament. It's an amazing thing. Many, many wives, concubines, which isn't something you have on the farm field, out in the field. This is a different kind of a bind. This is a concubine. Much more trouble from the concubines than you get from your wheat combine or whatever. Children. Oodles of children. I mean, they just said, so that's all they did, is just had children. You got all these concubines and wives and stuff, and you got all these people having children. Man. And they didn't have life insurance or health insurance or anything. How could we have so many children? It's crazy things. But and yet, as they had more children, they took over. And it just kind of a bunny trail. What's happening in America? One of the things that's hurting America is we're not having children, and they are. And they're just replacing us just by sheer numbers. That's what happened in those days, too, as well. We see in the Old Testament that there was a lot of unrighteousness, and they paid for it. The unrighteousness they did, they had to pay for it. And there was reaping of sickness and death and pain and misery. Families were torn apart. And yet, when you think about it, when the Lord came along, he really cleaned up the world. Christianity really cleaned up, civilized the world. And whether it be the Great Commission or whatever it was, getting into Jesus' teachings and realizing what things ought to be, cleaned up the world. And as we get away from Christianity as such, we're going back to the Old Testament. We're going back to the filth. Look at the people that are fighting. Look at how they live over in the Mideast. And David said the smell was just horrible. It's just there. It's just always there. One of the things they're asking for the Marines and the people that are over there, for people in America to send, and that's flea collars, because of all the fleas and the sand and everything, and they just, the servicemen are wearing flea collars all the time. It's just a dirty world over there. And that's all coming back. But I look at Paul, I mean, Jesus Christ came along and he cleaned up all this Old Testament stuff, because he walked all the stuff he should walk. But Paul puts on the polish. Paul puts on the finishing touches. And that could have taken place in this world. If the world would have gotten on the rightly dividing into Paul's manners and manners of life, that would have cleaned up the world and kept it that way. That's how I see the purpose of Paul's stuff. But anyway, we'll see a couple examples today, probably, hopefully. And as you read, you'll see more of them. Old Testament concepts that we still preach today. That we find the Great Commission people, because it's a Jewish gospel. And the tribulation stuff, it's Jewish. It's almost like Old Testament thinking, which I'll show you a couple as we go here. And rightly so. It's all geared to the flesh. So it's gonna appeal to our flesh one way or the other. But anyway, we know those things here. Be prepared for a massive. We got room if they do show up. Scott and the gang is coming. Hopefully, they said they'd make it this morning. So, if you think about it, here's the Old Testament, the manner of life. The Old Testament is all flesh and killings and conquering. Da 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 da. Jesus comes along, and it's still Old Testament, but he's the one that's done all the walking, of the walk and everything, fulfilled that righteousness. And then Paul comes along, and they ignore all that stuff. And then they end up, over these years, preaching the Jewish gospel as such, and going back to the Old Testament ways, and here comes the Antichrist with the Jewish gospel. Paul just does not fit this picture at all. And I would have to say that if I didn't have my faith knowing that that Bible, all 66 books, really is the Word of God, I can see why people say, well, Paul has nothing to do with this. We don't do this. We don't read Paul. I mean, what is this? I can see why they say what they say. And they do hate Paul's teaching. And we'll talk about that later this morning. They really hate him out there. I think they hate his stuff more than Jesus Christ today. Because there's so many fake Jesuses, and there's so many teachings of Jesus, that they can put up with all that stuff. But they cannot put up with Paul. And there's no other fake Pauls. I mean, it's either Paul or it's not. And they really don't like that stuff. So it's an amazing thing. Amazing thing. So anyway, the Old Testament manner of life is what we're seeing as we read through. And we're going to see all that stuff now the rest of the books. The killings, the murders, the walk, the unrighteousness, the penalty, the reaping as they sowed, all that kind of stuff. But let's go to chapter 17, verse 6. Let's look at some other quick little things that, like I say, we'll do Ruth next week. And if you have not read Ruth for a while, read it again if you would. It doesn't take very long. And read it a lot. Read it a number of times. Okay, here we go. Chapter 17, verse 6. Here's something that we see taking place. In those days, there was no king in Israel. But every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And then if you move over to 21, chapter 21, verse 25, we see the same thing. And we know that that pops up later in the Old Testament too. They have no king. They have nobody's going to guide them as such. They don't want a king. They're going to do it the way they want to do it. Now, look at Deuteronomy chapter 12. So every man did that which was right in his own eyes. No king in Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 8. They were warned not to do that. Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 8. You shall not do after all the things that we do here this day, every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes, for ye are not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance, which the Lord your God giveth you. So they haven't arrived yet. And he tells them way back in Deuteronomy, listen, folks, you have not landed yet. And so don't you be thinking you're going to do stuff the way you want to do it. That tells me in the millennium, the rest and the inheritance time will know what to do. Right? They will know then. And so will we. But until that time comes, don't do what you think is right. And this has marvelous application for us even today. Look at Proverbs chapter 12, verse 15. This is more of a mini sermon at this point here, but they're doing what they think is right in their own eyes. They were told not to. Proverbs 12, 15. They were told not to, and the reference they said was, listen, you have not arrived yet to the rest and to the inheritance. That's the millennium. So Proverbs 12, 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes. Look at chapter 21. Proverbs 21, verse 2. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the hearts. Look at Proverbs 14. Just a little sermon on doing things that we think is right in our own eyes. Proverbs 14, verse 12. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. So there's just because we're doing it our way, sure doesn't mean that it's going to be the right way. And then lastly, Well, it's the same thing. 16:25 says the same thing. So there's two verses that say that, by the way. Now, let's look at 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Let's get this out of the Old Testament just for a minute. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 tells us chapter 10, verse 12. For we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. And you're sitting there, you're just sitting there doing what you think is right because look at what somebody else does and they're wrong. And that just makes me righter. So we're looking at ourselves. What application does that have for us out of the Old Testament? Oh, plenty. You know, what is the king that we should follow? The Old Testament? No. The Gospels? I mean, that's Jesus. He's the king. But he's not king yet. He's King of Kings and Lord of Lords, but his kingdom is not down here yet. So we do follow Jesus as our king, but he's not down here yet. The only place that we can follow Jesus as our king is the Bible. And it happens to be called the King James Bible, which we're not following King James. He's just the guy that financed it. And if we want to get really picky, we really need to get down to Paul. That's who we're following. That's the king. And yet if you want to get really, really, really intensely picky, we go beyond Paul. Because there are some things in Paul's earthly ministry in the early stages that we don't do today. Because of the real king that came along. And that's that King James Bible. So, we do have a king. But it's not blindly following our feelings or our heart. It's following the book. So, there is your mini sermon for today. See, they should have had a book. Well, they had the law. Had them written down and everything back in those Old Testament days. Then that whole thing about doing right which is in his own eyes just makes me start thinking about teenagers. And as they grow up into teenagers. And if they're probably already pre-teens anymore today, because everybody say everything is so much earlier every year, that your little kids already are probably acting like teenagers already because they've got enough in their little snoogers up there that they think that they already know how to do is right. Maybe it's because we've taught them to think that way. They got to see us in that book. What does God say we should do today? What are we doing today? Would God like us to do this? That kind of a thing. They need to see who our king is. So they get the example of who should be for them. Then I start thinking about wives. This whole world is geared by ladies that think they are doing right in their own eyes. They could care less what the men say. Amen? Then you got the men. Too busy, too many toys. They're doing things that they haven't even got time to check out what their king should say. So we're kind of all in this boat, aren't we? We really can. We've got to be careful picking on those Israelites because we're kind of in the same boat. Look at Isaiah chapter 3. I remember years and years ago. Well, not years and years ago. You had the years and years ago. We just have years ago. The elementary school. Then they started having kings and queens. First it was the high school, the seniors, you know, having the king and queen homecoming. Then the elementary school started doing it. It's amazing. Isaiah chapter 3, verse 5. Really shouldn't be all that amazing to us, though, really. It's already happened once before. It's happening again. Isaiah chapter 3, verse 5. And the people shall be oppressed, everyone by another. So everybody's doing what they think is right. And everyone by his neighbor. And the child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient. And that really bothers me when I see little children just talking rude or mouthy. It just really bothers me to see little guys who we ought to be able to control a little bit talk like they do to older people. That really bugs me. So if you see me reprimand a little kid, it's just because, hey, whoa, you don't talk to them that way. This is what's happening. The child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient. And the base against the honorable. It's an amazing world we're living in. It's coming to true again. Look at verse 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors. and women rule over them. Okay? Oh, my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err. So the children who are running your homes are causing your home to be an error and destroy the way of thy paths. Our children can do that. Ladies running the ship can do that. But men who do not have a king can do it too. Can lead wrongly. So that was the frosting on that sermon. There we go. Pretty quiet all, but that's true. Is that not true? I mean, look around. Look at the ladies. I'm not picking on you ladies today. Just look at the ladies. Oh, everywhere you go, it's a lady. And you look at the children, how they talk to their parents and how they talk to their teachers, if they even, just whatever. It's just amazing. And I see it here. I'm sorry, I see it here. We're too busy to deal with a moment that, boy, if you don't deal with that moment now, it's going to be tenfold worse a week later. And if you're still not dealing with it, you're going to have to deal with it someday. Maybe not till they're, how old are you, man? Maybe not till they're 35. that's just where it's at. That's just the truth. That's what the Bible does to us. It puts the truth to us that we really don't want to hear all the time. Let's go on. Let's go back to 17 now. It's Judges 17. And it makes me think of single men. I know we got some single men out there that aren't too thrilled about being single, but maybe that'll count their blessings a little bit. Meaning, of course, it's best, yeah, don't. It's best to be on that ship than it is to have the wrong passengers in this world. Because it's destroying families and it's destroying everything. We're fine and everything. You know, I'm not saying that. Okay, if my life is going to continue today, let's go on to chapter 17, Judges 17. Just some quick things now in Judges. I just want to touch base on just for a second here. Amazing things take place in this Old Testament. 17 verse 5. And here's Micah. Micah. You know, Old Testament man. And the man Micah had an house of gods and made an ephod and teraphim and consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. And there's some other stories, other facts in the story of Micah. They're the house of Micah. But isn't that the way it is today? We have a house of gods. What do we have in our house that's gods? We have a house. Our houses are full of gods. Oh, they are not. Oh, everywhere from the refrigerator to the computer to the TV tube to the video to the yard to the you name it, your clothes. Look, Ben, pull open some of those. Here we go, Jerry. You'll like this. Pull open some of the cupboard doors, I'll bet, right? And just, wow, as it just flies out of you. You got little foot gods down there, 45,000 little guys down there. What am I going to do today that's going to make my day? That's a god. That kind of a thing is what makes your day. It's just amazing things. But anyway, I've probably got an office full of them. I'm trying to get rid of them little by little. Once I get tired of it, then I get rid of it. If I'm not tired of it, I keep it. Yeah, is that how you do it? I just want to be a good example for you folks. I don't want you to feel I'm any holier than you. Anyway, you got your god. Sometimes you got a garage of gods. I went to visit a pastor years ago, and that was back in the days we're first into the ministry, realizing that we can't have anything in the early ministry, not allowed to have anything fun. Because if you do, you got too much luxury, so you got to suffer. And I went to the pastor's house, went into his garage, and I could not find a piece of sports equipment that did not represent every sport somewhere. I say that right? His garage had every piece of equipment for every sport I could think of, other than the Olympic luge or he didn't have a bobsled hanging in there. But he had every sport was hanging in that garage. I mean, he had fishing poles and guns and boats and it was like, oh, wait a minute. That's just an amazing thing. That guy's not in the ministry anymore. He crumbled, fell apart. Anyway. Let's look at verse 10. Chapter 17, verse 10. Now, see, these things aren't to us, but we sure can learn from them. chapter 10, this is what I would call today's expectation for Christians. Let's read verse 10. And Micah said unto him, dwell with me, and be unto me a father and a priest. I will give thee 10 shekels of silver by the year, and a suit of apparel, and thy victuals. So the Levite went in, and the Levite was content to dwell with the man. And the young man was unto him as one of his sons. And Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest, and was in the house of Micah. Then said Micah, now know I that the Lord will do me good, seeing I have a Levite to my priest. You bought this guy. Now I've got what I need. But it gets better. Let's go to chapter 18, verse 10. This is more of our desire today. Verse 10, when ye go, ye shall come unto a people secure, and to a large land. For God hath given it into your hands, here we go, a place where there is no want of anything that is in the earth. It's got everything they want. Do we ever have anything, everything we want? The eyes of man are what? Yeah. We're just, boy, we got the vehicle, we got the toys, we got the games, we got the whatevers, and well, I'll tell you, about a week later, you just need some more. And because we've been allowed to, we're trying to make our homes a place where we have no need, no want. And then we wonder why sometimes our kids go out, then they got to start from that point and go on. And it's just really damaging, terribly damaging. Let's look at our candlelight vigils. You know, when somebody dies or they're hurt or they're buried under an avalanche, instantly, the town becomes candlelight opera down there. I mean, there's candle circles, and they're putting these little bags with candles in them up and down the highway, and they go put a little circle around their house with candlelights, all this kind of stuff, and they get there and they pray, and they just really get into this. Have you seen those things? Look at chapter 20. John Lennon, when he died, a bunch of candlelight people, you know, John Denver, that's the ones I remember, John. I guess it's all the musical guys. You know? What's their musical? I don't know. Judges chapter 20, verse 26. Then all the children of Israel and all the people went up and came into the house of God and wept and sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until even and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. These are just the things that we see today that are Old Testament. And people want to get out there, and they think they can just impress God with their wailing and their weeping. And I don't have this for proof. It's been a long time since I've learned this. I should have looked it up, I guess. But I think they pay people to weep in the Middle East. Yeah, I think they just pay those ladies to act like that. You know, and the cameras go for that kind of a thing. And I always wondered, boy, yeah, really, now that I've learned that, you know, it's like, boy, now she's good. She's a good one. This one isn't so good. Because if you see them smiling, then their eyes look for the camera, or while wailing and weeping, and they're kind of looking for the cameras a little bit, or they're just doing one of these things, and they're probably not related to this guy or this kid. I mean, it's hard stuff, but no, they're good at that stuff. And that's just an Old Testament thing. Here we go. Look at chapter 17, verse 2. Here's another one. I call this nun talk. N-U-N, but you hear this from a lot of the holy type people. And he said unto his mother, the 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from thee, about which thou cursest, and spakest of also in mine ears, behold, the silver is with me, I took it. That's another story. And his mother said, oh, blessed be thou of the Lord, my son. And I see that my son stuff, and I just picture Catholic people talking that way. Oh, my son. The priest and all that kind of stuff. Well, my son, bless you, my son, all that kind of stuff. That's Catholic stuff right there. That's all that is. Isn't that quite a story? You remember reading that story? She's got all this silver, and he took it. Just keep reading. We've got a couple of seconds here. Verse 3. And when he had restored the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, I had wholly dedicated the silver unto the Lord from my hand for my son. Oh, such a touching story. To make a graven image and a molten image. "Oh, Mom, I didn't mean to take your money. I'm sorry." And she says, "Oh, you know, son, I'm sure glad you gave it back. Let's go downtown because I want to buy you another video game. I want to get you some more junk. In fact, you know what? We could probably even get you some. It looks like you're having a cold. We could probably get you some Sudafed. And you can kind of make your own cold medicine. I hear that's what you and your friends are doing in his garage over there." You know, some parents can be oblivious. "Why do you need 10 boxes of Sudafed? I'll go to Walmart and get them for you, son." It's an amazing thing what's going on. It's quite a story. And it just keeps going. Yeah, that's why he's got a house of gods, you know. Anyway, let's look at the whole chapter 17 is the story of Micah. That's pretty interesting stuff. You can read that if you like. The house of Micah. How about, let's go to chapter 19. what a story. And I don't know where to go. We got 10 minutes. I guess we could just read this thing again and just let this thing... And it sure does cause problems in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It really does. That means that you're responding. That means you've read it and you've remembered these things. Have you run across anything yet that you've read but you don't remember ever reading it?
Yeah.
That's why this has taken me so long. I've never been so interested in the Old Testament as I am now, trying to highlight it. And I basically could just stand here and read it to you, and we could laugh together and cry together and light our candles together. Blessed be all you, my people, kind of a thing. It's an amazing thing. But do you underline little comments? You think you'll never see him again, but you know, you look back at some of those underlined things, and wow, that's amazing. Let's try chapter 19, verse 1. "And it came to pass in those days, when there was no king in Israel," there it is again, "and that there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim, who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. And his concubine played the whore against him." Who are you going to see that written any better than that? You know. "And went away from him into her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah, and was there 4 whole months. Like that, 4 whole months. "And her husband arose and went after her to speak friendly unto her." Does that just mean something to me but nobody else? I mean, you just go speak friendly to your wife. So kind of this whole thing here. We can do that, can't we? Mothers, speak friendly to your children. Children, speak friendly to your mother. You can even use that. Now, kids, you're not speaking friendly to your dad. That's not speaking friendly. Speak friendly to your dog. Treat him nicely. Speak friendly to anybody. Policeman stops you for speeding. Don't say, "Don't look at my truck, okay?" Just speak friendly to this guy. Get out your license, say, "Oh, this isn't the right one. Here's the right one." Well, speak friendly to these guys. Reading some jokes lately that are just totally my own here. Oh, let's go down here. We can go. They just ate together and da-da-da-da. They did both eat and drink, both of them together. And where does it get good? It goes over here to 22. Let's go to 22. "Now they were making their hearts merry. Behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about, and beat at the door, and spake to the master of the house, the old man, saying, 'Bring forth the man that came unto thine house, that we may know him.' And the man, the master of the house, went out unto them and said unto them, 'Nay, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man is come into mine house, do not this folly. Behold, here is my daughter.'" I tell you what. This is a sick world then. They're doing it today. Sacrificing kids all the time to the people out there. "And his concubine, then I will bring out now and humble ye them, and do with them what seemeth good unto you. But unto this man do not so vile a thing. But the men would not hearken to him. So the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them, and they knew her, and abused her all the night until the morning. And when the day began to spring," that's nice, like how that's put, "now they let her go." Okay. Well, that's bad enough. Right? I mean, that's bad. Isn't that terrible? Ship your kids off to a single, ship your ladies or women or whatever. Then came the woman in the dawning of the day and fell down at the door at the man's house where her lord was till it was light. I'm sure that was a rough night. And her lord rose up in the morning and opened the doors of the house, went out to go his way, and behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of his house, of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. And he said unto her, Up and let us be going. But none answered. Then the man took her up upon an ass, and the man rose up and got him into his place. And when he came into his house, he took a knife and laid hold on his concubine and divided her together with her bones into 12 pieces. Truth. And sent her into all the coasts of Israel. Now, how do you even do that? Homing pigeons? UPS? They found a guy all cut up in the highway along San Diego the other day. And it was so that all that saw it said, there was no such deed done nor seen from the day that the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider of it, take advice, and here's a good phrase, speak your mind. That's just a knocking story. You ever run across these things when you're reading your cute little kids at night? Whoa, okay, let's see, maybe we'll skip to the next chapter. There's a couple places I skip reading to David and say, let's not go there. I'm not going to talk about that today. He can read them on his own. And it just keeps going, doesn't it? That little thing just, it has its aftermath as well. Then you get over here to chapter 20. Well, let's go to 26. I mean, verse 26 of chapter 20, verse 26. I mean, the ramification of that little action really stirred up the bee's nest. There's no doubt about that. Well, look up to verse 15. There's a number again. And the children of Benjamin were numbered at that time out of the cities 26,000 men that drew sword. I see numbers, and I've seen enough history to know that the Middle East never has been grassed and paved and highways and all that stuff. We're talking desert here. 26,000 men traveling through the desert. There's an awful lot of artifacts they could find out in the desert. They dug deep enough. Swords and pieces and stuff. That's 16. Among all this people, there were 700 chosen men left-handed. Anybody left-handed in here? Kids? Are you? John, you left-handed? He forced you, huh?
That's
all right,
I was forced to.
Yeah. You ought to drop that word forced because it's your dad doing what he thinks best for you. Does he ever have to force you to eat? Well, sometimes if it's green. Among all those people, 700 chosen men left-handed, everyone could sling stones at an hair breadth and not miss. That's good. I can't even do that with a gun. Verse 17, and the men of Israel, besides Benjamin, were numbered 400,000 men that drew sword. That's just a lot of people out there. And it's not like we're looking at South America, even. It's just a small little neighborhood out there, a housing project out there that all these thousands of people drew swords. And who's making all these swords? Somebody's making big shekels, making all these swords for these people. Yeah, really. Oh, I tell you. Okay, anyway, things go on, and up in 25, 18,000 die. But where are all these bones? They had to run across something here pretty soon. The wind blows off some of this sand. They had to find a pile of something. Swords and bones and... What? It's been a while. Swords ought to still be there, though. Hey, Sam. Often. Archaeology. I love archaeology. Very interesting to me over there. All of a sudden, this little mound can have all these levels of civilization. I'm not sure they didn't plant all that stuff, some of that stuff. I know one of the stories I heard is they dug down and they found a Johnson outboard motor in one of those levels. You probably heard that one. And that kind of spoiled what they were doing. You know, so... Really? Somebody had a good time with that one someday. Anyway, and then chapter 21, look at verse 12. These guys are the Benjaminites here. They're nobody's coming. They have nobody for wives, that kind of a thing. So, verse 7. How shall we do for wives for them that remain, seeing we have sworn by the Lord that we will not give up of our daughters to wives? What are they going to do? Verse 12. When they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead 400 young virgins that had known no man. How do they find these things? And how do they know this? Now, I'm not casting doubt. I missed the details. I know that's true. Somebody would look at that and go, oh, that's not even possible. That's just storytelling. No, that is not storytelling. That is true. How it works out in reality and detail, I have no clue. But, that's quite a deal. And that they had known no man by lying with any male, and they brought them into the camp to Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, and there's the wives, just like that. Oh, well, there you are, Sunday school judges. Now, next week, Ruth, marvelous. I'll be more serious, maybe, for Ruth. That's a marvelous story. See you in a couple minutes.